Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And today we open our show with some news from the state capitol in Sacramento. Governor Jerry Brown has issued a new state budget this week with some major revisions from an earlier budget proposed. When Brown took office, the state faced a $26 billion budget deficit, and that's since been eliminated by a combination of a recovering economy, budget cuts, and some temporary taxes. The new budget sets aside a rainy day fund for the future, and it also allocates money to make the final payment on economic recovery bonds. Overall, the budget pays down $11 billion in debt and fully funds the teachers' retirement system over the years. The budget also allocates funds to partially repay claims owed to local governments since 2004. In addition, the governor's revised budget expands health care coverage to 1.4 million more Californians. Plus, it adds more funds for emergency drought assistance, education, and personnel to assist with in-home supportive services and unemployment. "This May revision is good news for California," said Governor Brown. "It shows that California can afford to provide health care to many more people while at the same time paying its debts and shoring up the long-troubled teachers' retirement system." Now we're going to hear from Leon Thompson.
A new report issued by the American Civil Liberties Union reveals a pattern of racial profiling in vehicle stops by San Diego police officers. The report states, quote, "Blacks account for 12.3% of vehicle stops, but only 5.8% of the population. Hispanics were also stopped at higher rates than whites. Moreover, once stopped, Blacks were searched three times more often than whites, and Hispanics were searched at twice the rate of whites. Only 1 in 25 white people stopped were searched versus 1 in 8 black people and 1 in 12 Hispanics. Yet of those stopped, black and Hispanic people were actually arrested less often than other racial groups." That's not news to people in communities of color locally. A recent town hall meeting hosted by San Diego's new police chief, Shelley Zimmerman, over 200 people turned out in southeast San Diego and City Heights, and many of them raised the issue of racial profiling, San Diego Voice and Viewpoint reports. Laychala Wilson, president of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, says, "Perception is reality. And the data shows that it's no longer perception but reality," Wilson said. The NAACP leader said, "It's clear that blacks are being profiled and more likely to be stopped," adding, "There's no way you can spin away that blacks aren't being profiled along with Latinos." The ACLU has called on San Diego police to review its policies and practices on racial profiling, as well as start collecting data on pedestrian stops as well as traffic stops.
This is Ed Barena, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. A joint arson task force has been established to determine the origin and cause of the many fires throughout San Diego County this week. If you have any information regarding the fires, please call San Diego Crime Stoppers at 619-235-TIPS. That's 619-235-8477. You can remain anonymous, and a reward is offered for information that leads to a conviction. The Joint Arson Task Force includes collaboration with CAL FIRE, the San Diego Sheriff's Department, the San Diego Police Department, Oceanside Fire Department, ATF, FBI, and San Diego Fire Rescue Department.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they
leave? This is Miriam Raftery with an agricultural report. Finally, scientists have come up with a solution to combat the Asian citrus psyllid, a pest that transmits citrus greening, otherwise known as Wanglongbing disease, which is 100% fatal to citrus trees once they become infected. Originally from Asia, this pest wiped out 40% of Florida's citrus crops before making its way into California. The insects are now found across San Diego County and elsewhere in our state, though the disease has thus far only stricken one tree in Los Angeles. But since California produces 80% of the nation's citrus fruits, citrus greening disease is a major concern. Treating the citrus pests with chemical pesticides is expensive and drew objections from organic farmers as well as many residents, since about 80% of all the citrus trees in our state are in backyards, not commercial groves. Now, Mark Hoddle, an entomologist from the University of California, Riverside, has found a natural predator that eats the Asian citrus psyllid. Hoddle traveled to Pakistan in search of a small wasp that preys on this bug. Scientists carefully studied the wasp to make sure it won't become a problem in our ecosystem locally before determining whether it could be released. Fortunately, they found that if there are no Asian citrus psyllids to eat, the wasp just dies. So now a laboratory run by the California Department of Food and Agriculture is breeding the wasps and beginning to release them strategically throughout the state. By year's end, researchers hope to release a million of the wasps across California. Once done, they will next be monitoring how effective these voracious wasps prove to be in eradicating the dreaded Asian citrus psyllid.
This is a public service announcement from the City of La Mesa. Applications are now being accepted for positions on the city's boards, commissions, and committees. The deadline for submission of applications is 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 5th, in the city clerk's office at La Mesa City Hall. A total of 20 vacancies exist on the Aging and Veterans Commission, Community Services Commission, Design Review Board, Historic Preservation Commission, Human Relations Advisory Commission, La Mesa Community Parking Commission, Personnel Appeals Board, Planning Commission, Traffic Commission, and Youth Advisory Commission. The mayor and city council members value the input from our community volunteers, said Mary Kennedy, city clerk. By serving as a member on one of the boards, commissions, or committees, residents have an opportunity to assist in the decisions that affect their neighborhood and city. Again, the deadline to apply is June 5th, and then La Mesa City Council will interview applicants for appointments to the city's advisory boards, commissions, and committees at its meeting on June 24th. Applications may be obtained at City Hall or by accessing the City of La Mesa's website at www.cityoflamesa.com. For more information, you can also call the city clerk at 619-667-1120. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Ed Barreno with the Health Report. 12 more cases of pertussis, or whooping cough, where others may have been exposed, have been reported to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency this week. That includes 2 cases in East County in students at La Mesa Middle School in the La Mesa Spring Valley School District and Los Coches Creek Middle School in the El Cajon School District. The number of pertussis cases has risen sharply to 352 cases so far this year, compared to just 59 during that same period last year. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose for 1 to 2 weeks, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent the spread of disease to others. Many of the cases occurred in children who were not up to date on vaccinations recommended by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and the booster shot for themselves and their children through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at minimal or no cost. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, call the HHSA Immunization Branch at 866-358-2966 or visit www.sdiz.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a political report. If you have ever thought that your vote is not important, take a look at the La Mesa effort to get a term limits initiative on the ballot. The initiative seeks to limit the terms that city council members and the mayor can serve. And we've just learned that it did qualify for the ballot by exactly 1 signature.
This is Ed Barreno for East County Magazine on KNSJ. With the threat of wildfires across multiple states, the nonprofit Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, offers wildfire prevention tips for residents. You can protect your home and prepare your family for wildfires. Remember, embers can be blown more than a mile from the flame, so it is critical to take action to make your home wildfire resilient. Here are some ways to prepare your family. Have a fire disaster plan, including at least 2 predetermined evacuation routes, a NOAA weather radio, and disaster kit for your family. Follow any and all evacuation orders immediately. Here are some other ways you can protect your home. Identify an emergency water supply within 1,000 feet of your home through one of the following: community water hydrant system, drafting site on a lake, cooperative emergency storage tank with neighbors, or a swimming pool. Remove fuels that can lead flames to your home or that can become ignited from wind-blown embers, including dead grass, leaves, and branches within 30 feet of buildings. Dry leaves and litter from roofs, rain gutters, decks, and walkways, dead and dry litter at the base of plants, tree branches within 6 to 10 feet off the ground, firewood within 30 feet of buildings, and continuous beds of combustible vegetation on the ground or in treetops that can bring large flames within 100 feet of your home. Clean your gutters, eaves, and roof to make sure they are clear of debris. Plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition, including native fire-resistant vegetation, which you can check with your local forestry agency for this, fire-prone trees and shrubs away from your home and far enough apart so they won't ignite one another. Make sure your street number is legible and clearly marked for emergency responders. Move any storage sheds, including lawnmowers, grills, gas cans, and tanks, away from your home. Before a threat, landscape with fire-resistant native plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition. Install metal screening that blocks embers from entering your buildings, including non-combustible attic crawl space vents and around low decks, non-combustible skirting around mobile homes, and if under a wildfire threat, only remove dead leaves or vegetation when local garbage collection services will have time to pick up the debris. Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, is a nonprofit organization and is a consumer advocacy group for strengthening homes and safeguarding families from natural and man-made disasters. For more information on wildfire prevention, visit www.flash.org or www.protectyourhome.org. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Verena.
And Ed, it sounds like we've got someone clearing some brush right outside that we're going to just keep going right through here.
There's definitely a buzz.
Yeah, exactly. A Kaiser Hospital nurse who rescued a baby and helped save the driver of a burning car in La Mesa has been honored for her actions at the Byrne Institute's Spirit of Courage Awards. These courageous individuals put their own safety aside to help someone they have never met, said Susan Day, Byrne Institute Executive Director. They are heroes in the truest sense. Lacey Lawrence and her family were visiting a home for sale on Jackson Drive last July when they heard a vehicle collision. Rushing out, they found a smoldering sedan that had crashed into a parked SUV. As the car began filling with smoke, Lawrence saw a baby crying in a car seat in the back of a car. The door was jammed, so she climbed into the vehicle through another door. The car seat was wedged under a collapsed seat, but Lawrence, using all of her strength, managed to push the seat off and free the baby just in time. She then helped save the baby's mother, the driver, who was slumped over the steering wheel and bleeding from her injuries. She was trapped between the steering wheel and the side of the car. While others worried about injuring the woman's neck if they moved her, Lawrence, a nurse again, stated that a broken neck wouldn't matter if the woman burned to death. Then she and other bystanders carefully supported the woman's neck and lifted her out of the burning car. Moments later, the car burst into flames. Firefighters arrived to douse the blaze and provide medical treatment for the driver, who was not wearing a seatbelt. The baby, fortunately, is just fine, thanks to Lacey Lawrence. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Listeners, please stay tuned. We're going to pause a moment for station identification, and then we're going to be back interviewing Kenneth Klein, who is a professor at California Western School of Law, specializing in legal lessons we can learn from disasters. He's going to be giving you some good advice about what you should know about insurance to protect your home, and if you are a wildfire survivor who lost a home or had damage in these fires, he's going to have some advice for you, too, about what you should know when dealing with your insurance company.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And today my guest is Cal Western Professor Kenneth Klein. Kenneth, lost his own home in the 2003 Cedar fires, and he teaches a course on legal lessons that can be learned from disasters. And certainly, I think after the terrible firestorms we've had the past week, where we had nearly 50 homes destroyed and thousands of folks evacuated, thousands of acres burned, this is very timely for our listeners. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your class, first of all.
Sure. Well, it turns out that natural disasters touch on all kinds of areas of the law that we don't really think about a lot. I mean, obviously insurance law, but also banking and land use and environmental issues, and it goes on and on. It can affect prison law issues, for example. In Katrina, they had to figure out a plan to evacuate prisoners at the same time that the prison guards all were getting evacuated as well. And it just goes on and on, except that the area is never thought of coherently. We don't think of each area of the law as part of a group and how it works together in natural disasters.
Correct.
And so that's what my course tries to do.
Now, of course, you lost your own home in the 2003 Cedar fire. So what are some of the lessons that you learned firsthand? I'm sure that's not the kind of experience one normally wants to prep for teaching a course, but what are some of the things that you discovered going through the process yourself that may be helpful to people going through the process now?
Well, I would start by talking about the emotional issues. It is astonishing how much we are grounded in our homes psychologically and emotionally.
Right.
And so you don't really learn that until all of a sudden your home isn't there, and the overwhelming thing you feel is disoriented. And so one of the things I learned was, first, this is going to take longer than you think. It was 3 years before I really felt like I was back home, even though I had rebuilt my home in just a little over 1 year. The second is, it's a very unique journey that every person experiences it differently. And even within a marriage, the couple will experience it differently, and children experience it very differently than adults
do.
Yeah,
very hard on children in particular.
Well, for a child, I mean, you can tell them as long as you want and as many times as you want that this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience for them. But if they're only 7 years old and it's already happened once, they just won't believe you.
Yeah.
Then, so the third lesson I learned is that everybody does, in fact, get home. One way or another, eventually, there is an end. And it is an endpoint that will work for them. They will get home.
Yeah, and many people, they always say rebuild, you know, bigger and come back bigger and stronger than ever. So that's something to keep in mind when you're going through those dark days, that there really is some light at the end of the tunnel. It may take a while to get there, but there are resources out there to help people along the way. So let's start by talking about insurance. Now, in your experience, how many people out there actually have adequate fire insurance? And have you heard any figures yet on this particular fire?
I've not heard figures on this particular fire. I doubt there are figures on this particular fire as yet, because it's only been in the last 2 days that the people who lost their homes may even know it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you need to know if you're getting ready to deal with this big insurance company? What are the things that people should do right now if they lost their home or they had damage?
As a general matter, you need to keep two things in mind. The first is you need to become a really excellent record keeper. The first thing I bought after the Cedar fire was a toothbrush, which tells you where I was starting on loss of possessions.
Wow.
But the next thing I bought was paper, pens, and organizers. You need to be a really good record keeper. You need to keep every receipt, including when you go to the gas station. You need to be making a record of every phone call you make. Who did you speak to? What was their title? What was said? And you just need to be a really good record keeper. That's a good starting point. The second thing, and the most difficult thing for people to realize, is that from the perspective of the insurance company, this is a business transaction. For the homeowner, it's your home.
Right.
It's not just your house, it's your home.
They're going to try to get out of it with as little money as they can get away with spending very often. So, sometimes I've heard they'll try to get people to sign something fast when you're under stress so that you can get some money, and maybe you would have done better if you held out a little bit longer. What are some of the tips for negotiating with your insurance company?
Well, the starting point is to get a hold of your policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's can be surprisingly difficult to get a copy of your insurance policy, especially if you lost your policy in the fire,
which
so it burned up.
For future reference, yeah. For folks, those of you that didn't lose your homes, that's one of those things that you should probably have a record of it stored some safe place in a safe deposit box, scan it in, have it stored in the cloud somewhere, backup off of your
Absolutely.
Computer system.
Then second thing becomes there are some checks you'll be entitled to early. Mm-hmm. For example, you're entitled to a check for your alternative living expenses. These are the expenses you're incurring because you're not in your home for
right.
the moment.
Right, renting an apartment, meals out, things like that.
Et cetera. Exactly. And those checks come early. And so a second thing to remember is do not accept any check that requires you to sign something waiving your right to any next check.
Okay.
Then from there, inventory becomes your... A huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
You have to document everything you lost to get reimbursed for it.
Which is very difficult.
It's not only conceptually difficult, it's incredibly challenging to figure out and to recall yeah. what you lost, but then to put a price on it. Because what you get changes depending upon whether you replace it or whether you don't replace it. And that drives, and that can be a very different figure.
Correct. I know I've worked with some mm-hmm. people who've gone through this, and the person that had no trouble getting the max on his policy while all his neighbors were fighting about it was a guy who, on the way out the door, paused to videotape everything in his house. He had enough time to do that, opened the drawers, took pictures inside all the drawers on all the walls, knowing they might have to evacuate. And so he was able to document what really was in the house, you know, 5 minutes before he left town and during the evacuation orders.
And if you have that kind of time, that's great. What I would suggest for people now who haven't lost their homes,
right,
or for people who do, is there is a website. It's a group called United Policyholders. And mm-hmm. if you go to their website, which is uphelp.org, you can download an app literally onto your iPhone
mm-hmm.
that will walk you through building an inventory, figuring out depreciation,
yeah.
and if you have a home that hasn't burned, creating that record now mm-hmm. that will be stored up on the cloud so that you won't be in that position later.
Now, I know I had a neighbor once who had a large loss, not through fire, but through theft, and did not have receipts for some of the items. But she asked me, could I sign something attesting that I was her witness that she did, in fact, have this laptop computer and stuff that was in the trunk of the car. And I did that, so her insurance actually did pay for it once she had multiple people confirming that, yes, she had this stuff. Is that something to keep in mind?
Oh, absolutely, it can help. For example, I remember in our neighborhood after the Cedar Fire, if somebody claims something unusual, a particularly large and valuable wine collection, more computers in the house than people who live there, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Insurance companies often would honor these kinds of photographs that showed it or mm-hmm. neighbors who could attest, I have seen it, that sort of thing, because they're not looking to affirmatively cheat you, but they are also cautious about not allowing you to cheat them.
Correct. And certainly there are people on the other side who do try to take advantage.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind, I would think, is that you don't necessarily have to prove every toothbrush in the house. These policies have limits, and what you basically want to do, right, is prove that you had the maximum of the limit or as close to it as you can come. So is it helpful sometimes to start with the big items? I mean, if you had the grand piano that burned and you could take a picture of that, maybe you're going to hit that max pretty fast with some of this stuff and not necessarily have to stress out about how many toothbrushes were in the drawer.
Well, I guess I would answer you two ways.
Okay.
The first is the amount of your insurance for what is in your house, your stuff, is not a randomly picked number.
Mm-hmm.
There is an enormous amount of data in the insurance industry that regardless of where you live or how you live or how wealthy you are, that the value of your things is roughly 75% of the value of your house. And so what you are insured for personal property, is always 75% of the insured value of the home. It turns out that because of the application of depreciation, that can be harder to get to than you think it is.
Mm.
That said, if you can figure out the value of your furniture, your clothing,
jewelry.
Your jewelry, the contents of your kitchen, and the contents of your garage, that will be about 80% of what you own.
There you go. If you have a home office with a lot
yeah.
of computers and office equipment or really expensive stereo gear or something, that can bump it up there pretty fast.
Right. And so, but So everything else tends to be on the margins, the knickknacks around the house and that kind of thing. Frankly, the things that you value the most are the things that are of no value to the insurance company. They're your wedding album, your baby pictures, those sorts of things.
Yeah. I've heard that most homeowners actually are underinsured. Why is that?
It's really interesting. It's hard to get exact data, but by underinsurance, I mean that you don't have enough money to rebuild the home that you lost. Your insurance proceeds are less than that.
Right.
And about 80% of this nation is that. That's what we're going to find in this fire, too. It happens every time. If we have 50 homes that are burned down, 40% of them won't have enough money to rebuild from their insurance policy. And the reason for that is that we have a fairly stable number of homeowners in this country. We only have about 5% of inventory of owned homes, owner-occupied homes, that turn over every year. So the money for an insurance company is not in new business, it's in renewals. And the thing that will cause someone to wonder quickest, can I get insurance cheaper, is if their premium goes up. And so the insurance company will not raise that premium. So year on year on year, as your property is appreciating, your insured value is remaining stable, and there's a gap being created. Now, there's more complexity to it than that, but that's the real driver. Then you intersect that with a fire, and now all of a sudden you have scarcity, and so price has gone up.
How do you make sure that you are insured for those who haven't lost a home yet for the future? How do you make sure that you have enough insurance to cover the actual cost of the rebuilding itself, apart from the contents coverage, which is separate? You know, we know building costs tend to go up and up, not down usually. How do you make sure that when the time comes, you will have enough if you can afford to buy that much insurance?
The best thing you can do, and by the way, let me start where you ended, which is if you can afford it. Home insurance is cheap. Just think about your own insurance bills and think about the per dollar cost of your car insurance versus your home insurance. Home insurance is cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And fully insuring your home is actually pretty cheap. You have to have a conversation with the broker or agent who you place insurance with, and it cannot be a conversation that is not in writing. You need to send them a letter or an email that says, I want to have enough insurance that if I lost my home completely, I would have enough money in insurance to rebuild it completely. You are an expert in writing that risk.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me the number I need. That's what I'm going to buy.
There you go.
And then you need to get them, force them, frankly, to respond in writing and say both of those writings somewhere other than in your house.
If you have problems and you feel that the insurance company is not being fair with you, what options do people have? Where can they complain or get help?
Well, we actually have a pretty consumer, meaning insured-friendly or homeowner-friendly department of insurance in California. So I would recommend doing two things. First, I made reference to this group that looks at consumer issues and insurance issues in particular, called United Policyholders, that I have become a huge fan of. So I would go as a first resource to uphelp.org, and you'll find everything you need. As a second level, I would go directly to the Department of Insurance. They will have a helpline. They are responsive, and they are helpful to the extent that they can as a government entity in mediating between you and your insurance company. As a last resort, you hire a lawyer.
There you go. And Sue. Now, are there any tips at all that you can give for people who were unfortunate enough not to have insurance, and also for those that are having trouble buying fire insurance? We know there's been issues near some rural stations that are closed most of the time, or often that people have been denied fire insurance coverage. Is there any help out there for these people?
Well, California has an uninsured motorist pool, a auto insurance pool for people who do not have auto insurance and can't get it through normal channels. There's a similar thing in home insurance called the FAIR plan. It's not the insurance you'd want if you could buy through the private markets, but you can always get insurance through one route or another. If you have no insurance at this point, you need to be tapping heavily into whatever you can through the Red Cross or other charitable organizations such as San Diego Foundation that will help you get the resources to get back. Because frankly, this is not a time to let pride stand in your way. You need to get right with accepting the help from others. It is a gift to someone who wishes to help you, to allow them to do so, and you need to let that happen.
That's very, very wise advice. And what about for those who are having difficulty buying fire insurance, who still have a home, but they've been denied fire insurance by their carrier? or was not renewed.
Again, there's a lot of complexity here. I was surprised that my rates did not go up when I rebuilt. Frankly, if I was the insurance company, I would have raised my rates. We now have a data point. This home.
Hopefully, when, they're not listening today.
I told them so at the time. But the as a general matter, we do not see in the city, with the frequency you see sometimes in the backcountry,
right,
an inability to get insurance. As a last resort, though, DOI can get you into, Department of Insurance,
Department of Insurance.
You into the California FAIR plan. So there is always an insurer out there.
So that's like a high-risk fire pool. You can still get the insurance. You may pay more or something. But,
it is
available. So if someone tells you you can't get fire insurance, that's actually not true, even in the riskiest areas. Is that correct?
That is my understanding. Okay. Now, in the meantime, you need to have defensible space around your property.
Sure.
We saw example after example in this past week of the effect of defensible space. You need to – this is one that surprises people. You need to not have ammo in your house. If the fire department comes upon your house and bullets are going off, they will not save it.
Okay.
That's because it puts them at risk. So you need – if you have ammo in your house, you need to have it in a fire safe somewhere where they can still – to save your house.
And on that explosive note, I think we're going to end today's interview, and we're going to be back later in the week, if you're tuning in late, with Kenneth Klein, the Cal Western professor who teaches a course on disaster law. And we'll be back later in the week speaking about issues of disaster preparedness, urban planning issues, how that plays into it, as well as just how prepared was our county and the new county fire authority to handle these wildfires and ones that may occur in the future. Ken, thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's program on Destination East County includes many outdoor activities, from hiking and fishing to car shows, festivals, and outdoor movies. Memorial Day activities are included, and two local theater groups have final weekend performances. The Healing Waters and Arts Festival will be held in Akumba Hot Springs on Saturday, May 24th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The festival takes place downtown and on parts of Old Highway 80, which is a high desert setting. Activities include Kumeyaay bird singers, crafts, vendors, holistic healing and New Age practitioners, food, including vegetarian, multiple music venues, children's activities, geocaching, and a drum circle. There is free parking and free admission. A Lebanese cultural festival takes place this weekend from Friday, May 23rd from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. and then on Saturday and Sunday, May 24th and 25th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at St. Ephraim Catholic Church in El Cajon. Authentic Lebanese foods will be served such as hummus, falafel, shawarma, tabbouleh, stuffed grape leaves, chicken kebab, and a wide assortment of gourmet sweets. Visitors can expect live music and dancing, folkloric performances, and a variety of booths with Lebanese specialties, a beer and wine garden, carnival rides, and raffle prizes. The Society for Creative Anachronism is staging a medieval battle at Potrero County Park on Saturday and Sunday, May 24th and 25th, from 11 a.m. to sunset. This visit to the Barony of Calafia is a free event with vendors, staged fighting events, and instruction. Visitors are invited to wear period attire to fit in with the festivities. Lake Jennings hosts two events with a hot dog cook-off. The first is a fishing event, the first annual catfish tournament, which takes place on Saturday, May 24th. The second event, for registered campers only, is the Lake Jennings first annual horseshoe tournament on Sunday, May 25th. Lake Jennings now has weekly campsite rates. Movies in the Park at Viejas begins on Friday, May 23rd with Anchorman 2, starting at 8 p.m. The Hobbit: Desolation of Smaug will be shown on Friday, May 30th. The Alpine Community Center and Knights of Columbus in Alpine are holding a car show on Saturday, May 24th that includes breakfast from 6 to 9 a.m., a taco lunch from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and a car show all day from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. An East County Arts and Crafts Fair and Spring Flea Market will be held outside on Saturday, May 24th, on the large grassy area next to the parking lot at the Heartland Masonic Hall on Ballantyne Street in El Cajon. The Las Hermanas Benefit takes place this weekend at the Cottonwood Golf Course on Friday, May 23rd at 6 p.m. San Diego Las Hermanas is a group of women dedicated to meeting the needs of East County and has raised over $600,000 for local charities in the 12 years they have been serving the community. This year, they are raising money for Fostering Opportunities, Dollars for Scholars, Include Autism, and the Challenge Center. The program for the evening, Escape to Tropical Paradise, includes cocktails, appetizers, silent auction, and a comedy show. Each Friday night at the Regal in the Village of La Mesa, there is free karaoke with KJ Roman beginning at 9:30 p.m. Young Actors Theater presents their last weekend of the production of Bye Bye Birdie at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. Performances are on Friday, May 23rd through Sunday, May 25th. Peter Pan will be performed by the Greenfield Middle School in El Cajon for this final weekend, with performances on Friday, May 23rd and Saturday, May 24th. Back at Hooley's Irish Pub and Grill in La Mesa is musician Tony Cummins on Friday, May 23rd at 8 p.m. Nature walkers can join with a Mission Trails Regional Park Guide and walk into the past on a fun facts walk through the area surrounding the historic Old Mission Dam. Visitors will also learn about the amazing variety of plant and animal life in open space lands. The group meets at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground entry station on Saturday, May 24th at 8:30 a.m. and returns at 10 a.m. An exhibition of vintage furniture from Pioneer Lemon Grove Homes entitled Furnishing Lemon Grove 1896 to 1955 will be open to the public on Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Parsonage Museum of Lemon Grove. The furniture types include Eastlake Victorian, Alberto Traganza Arts and Crafts, California Mission, Carpen Commercial, and Mid-Century Chrome Formica, along with photographs and artifacts of the period. The exhibit is open for viewing on weekdays by appointment only for classes and tour groups, and it is ongoing until Saturday, December 20th, 2014. In downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade, dinner and a concert is held every Friday night where spectators can enjoy great music and dancing from 6 to 8 p.m. This Friday night, May 23rd, features the Choice Entertainers, a doo-wop dance band. Next Friday night, May 30th, features the Detroit Underground for an evening of 70s to 80s dance music. Visitors to downtown El Cajon can arrive early to dine at one of the many restaurants, some with discounts for the evening, or bring their own picnic and lawn chairs. The Stage 4 Jazz Band performs at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, May 24th, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Besides jazz entertainment, there will be wine by the glass, cheese and crackers, and dessert available for sale. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. Next weekend, at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room and Gallery on May 31st, the People of Earth will be performing at 7 p.m. for a free show. Just a little farther down the road at Bistro 60 in San Diego Desserts on El Cajon Boulevard in the College area, musician Nathan Weldon performs each Friday evening at 6:30 p.m. An interpretive nature hike with a ranger happens at Lake Marina in Campo on certain Saturday afternoons through June 21st at 2:30 p.m. Hikers can learn about native plants and how the Kumeyaay Indians utilize natural vegetation in their daily lives, as well as the history of Lake Marina. The hike lasts about an hour and a half, and hikers are asked to call in advance to verify the hike start time. There will be a family discovery walk at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, May 25th, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. with trail guides Rosalie and Marcia to the Kumeyaay Grinding Rock site. Walkers will also get to hear about the seasonal changes in the park. Rain cancels the event. Now for a preview of some important upcoming events in East County next week, starting with Memorial Day on Monday. The 4th Annual Memorial Day Celebration at the Alpine Veterans Wall of Honor takes place on Monday, May 26th, at the Alpine Community Center from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. The festivities will include patriotic music by the San Diego Festival Chorus and soloist Peter Hastings to remember and pay tribute to the more than 500 heroes on the Wall of Honor. The Becker Squadron will do a flyover with their refurbished World War II biplanes decorated in red, white, and blue. And the Alpine Kiwanis Cook Shack will be on hand serving hamburgers and hot dogs. The Julian Fiddle and Picking Contest is back again this year on Saturday, May 31st at the Julian Town Hall. This fiddle and guitar picking contest is open to all ages and engages all those participating and listening in the festive and competitive atmosphere of the traditional old-time fiddle contest. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival will be happening this year on Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. for two action-packed days designed for the whole family with two stages of continuous live entertainment, a children's fun area with rides, and 300 craft community and food booths. The street fair takes place on Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway in Santee. Spring Valley Park is the location for the It's How We Live Festival, being held on Saturday, May 31st. The festival aims to teach individuals how to live a healthy, active life and includes health and dental screenings, food samples, live entertainment, giveaways, games, and more. The festival is free and runs from noon to 4 p.m., at the Spring Valley County Park on Hamishaw Boulevard in Spring Valley. On Saturday, May 31st, beginning at 9 a.m., downtown La Mesa Village will dress up in red, white, and blue to celebrate a salute to Old Glory at the La Mesa Flag Day Parade. The festivities kick off at 9 a.m. with pre-parade concerts by La Mesa and Parkway Middle Schools. At 10 a.m., the parade led by the United States 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing Band starts through downtown La Mesa Village. Guests can look forward to this year's celebration of the Ford Mustang's 50th anniversary. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Zore Garamani. My guest is the author of the novels The Moon Daughter, Sky of Red Poppies, which was translated into French and Persian, and The Commiserator, which is in Persian. Her work has received awards from the California Stories, KPBS One Book, One San Diego, and San Diego Book Awards. In addition, she has participated in a number of anthologies, including Tremors, New Fiction by Iranian-American Writers, A Year in Ink, and The Poetry of Iranian Women. Welcome, Dr. Garamani. It's a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you, and please call me Zoe.
Okay. Welcome, Zoe. Let's start with your new novel, The Moon Daughter. Give us a little teaser about this book, what motivated you to write it.
My first book, which you spoke of, had answered a lot of social, maybe some political questions, and altogether it was a glimpse into the past 40 years of Iran. So its success, surprising and thrilling as it was, would not guarantee that people necessarily like my writing. So obviously I was nervous about my second book because this one is purely fiction.
Sure.
But I will always want to write what I know more than other people know about, or what we say that in writing, as you know, write what you know best. And what I know best will always have a touch of Persian culture in it, because it was Iran where I was born and raised, and even though I have lived 40 years here, mm-hmm. my Iranian-ness will always be there, as you can hear it in my voice and accent. So this book is about a mother and a daughter. I always give my books a universal theme so readers of all walks of life can find something to relate to. And I wrote about an immigrant mother who, mm-hmm. her story is the first part of the book, and it's told in third person. And then I flip the coin and tell the rest of the story from the daughter's point of view, who is a lawyer, American raised, and very much an American.
Right.
So in that way, I have achieved two goals. One is to introduce part of the culture and the cultural differences, and also to bring it full circle to a resolution of what may or may not happen to immigrant families. And it is a universal story in that, in this story, the woman is Iranian, but we are a society of mixed cultures. And often that mixed culture presents a problem between parents and their
yes.
children.
Yes.
So that story is touched on. And it's about women's rights in the Middle East.
And those really are universal themes, aren't they?
Exactly.
Your award-winning novel, Sky of Red Poppies, is about two girls coming of age in Iran during the 60s. Talk a little bit about the social differences in Iran that you shared through your book.
For those who are familiar with the book, they know I have tried to make my pen into a camera and go back to 40 years of life there. And like every society, there are many differences culturally, not so much cultural, but economically, religiously, politically. There are differences. Yet one thing that we all shared was that we went to an all-girls school where you were required to wear a denim uniform. Mm-hmm. And once everybody wears that uniform, those social classes are masked.
Right.
It was only after school where these two friends show how different they are. One comes from a fundamental religious family. She's an activist. She's an intellectual. And the other one is an ordinary girl like I am, who just gets educated and her family is well-to-do and they can send her abroad, and she ends up abroad and never gets involved in anything. So then the one who is not involved tells the story of the one who was involved. And then it comes again full circle after 40 years into the story of a friendship and its redeeming powers.
So it's like very optimistic themes.
I never lose hope. And even though there are sad parts of it, mm-hmm. there's always hope.
Well, I know, obviously, immigration and the experiences, the generational changes, and friendship are big themes for you. I guess that's why you've been called the voice of the Iranian-American diaspora. What does that phrase mean to you, and how does it drive your work?
I'm glad to hear this. I had never heard
really?
People call me that.
I read it.
I have heard many other voices who are much stronger voices in diaspora, but maybe I am the naive voice in diaspora because I have never been involved in any activities. I've never had a clear political view. Mm-hmm. But I believe that this country is, rather than being a melting pot, it is a collage. Mm-hmm. Nobody really melts.
Right.
People keep their identities and come together in the most beautiful way and create a society that is unique. Mm-hmm. Each person brings their good traits into it and tries to shed the traits that are not so desirable. And that makes us a better society. So my gift, my 2 cents worth of this, being part of this collage and being for the past 40 years mm-hmm. included in this beautiful society, my gift to it is to represent my culture in the best way that I know.
Mm-hmm. And how have you changed during this process, this 40-year process? I mean, how has your cultural beliefs or your identity changed?
When I moved here in 75, I knew it was for good. That was years before any revolution had happened in Iran, years before restrictions were imposed on women. And I had to sit down and think, if this is where I am going to live for the rest of my life, I might as well blend in with the society. So I accepted the American culture right from day one.
Wow.
And never argued. I bragged about the fact that I make one of the best apple pies you could taste. rather than force my own culture on my children, I raised 3 of the best Americans I know, and they each in their own field are an asset to their society. And 2 of them don't even understand or speak a word of Persian, but that is not their duty to do. If they want to do it, they can always do it, and I'll be happy to help them. But that is my language, my mm-hmm. culture, and they can only pick it up if they want to. I will not push it at them.
Is there anything that you miss the most about your culture?
There's a lot. Mm-hmm. There's, above everything else, the unconditional love that I received while I lived in Iran, and I will never receive it anywhere else. Mm. And I have friends of all walks of society, but sometimes when it's put to test, I see that we Iranians are a bit crazy about friendship. We just go that extra mile. And I miss being surrounded by people who would go that extra mile. I do miss being recognized, being known in my mm-hmm. small town.
It's having a yeah. smaller society.
Exactly. Well, even if it's not small, once you do something good, you're a good student or you're a good writer,
see.
You become known by people.
Okay.
Here, everybody is living their own lives and it's more private.
The individualism.
Individualism. I don't even know some of my neighbors, and I've lived on the same dead-end street for 14 years. So if this was back in Iran, I would have been friends with most of them. We would know each other maybe by first name, you mm-hmm. know. And I do have very good neighbors that I do know. I'm not saying that everyone is like that. But that intimacy is what I miss the most. And the emotional, poetic way that they speak from day to day, even on an everyday, even an illiterate person knows hundreds of verses by heart. That I miss very much.
Interesting. So that brings me to my next question, which is about the Iranian-American community in San Diego. Is there a strong community as such, and how do you participate in it?
There's a very strong community. I believe the last someone told me there are 68,000 Iranian-Americans in San Diego. And there are many wonderful organizations. There's the Persian Cultural Center. There's the House of Iran in Balboa mm-hmm. Park. There's the Association of Iranian Professionals. numerous societies. And while I am a member of some of those and help here and there when I am asked to help, I am not 100% active in any of those because I have so many other volunteer works. I am much more diligent about being a friend of the Central Library than I am as a member of the PCC. So I do consider this my general big society, my big community, rather than focus on a smaller group just because we came from the same country.
I understand. Let's move to Sky of Red Poppies, which I know is on the reading list of many high schools and colleges. You've also had hundreds of articles and short stories appearing in U.S. and foreign publications. You've been successful. To what do you attribute your success, and do you have any advice for all those scribblers out there listening?
Yes. I first of all, it is true that luck has a lot to do with it. I owe my success to the San Diego readers. I could have published this book while I lived in Chicago, and none of this may have happened. There's a certain warmth and certain thirst for culture and knowing more among San Diegans that I've never seen anywhere else.
Really?
And I also was lucky that apparently my book, as soon as it came out, fell in the right hands and was represented by the right readers. So a lot of it has to do with luck. I'm not going to, even after 3 years, I am not going to let it get into my head to say, hey, here I am, the great writer they discovered. No, here I am, the lucky writer who was discovered. And I do hope more and more of my colleagues will be discovered in the same way, and I wish them well. But my advice would be never give up. Never, ever give up, because you're the one who brings the success about.
That's wonderful advice. Just one brief question to finish up. What are you writing next?
My next novel is titled The Basement. When I wrote Sky of Red Poppies, people asked me if there was a sequel to it. And I said no, because that story ended. It's that duration of time when major changes happen. And then I read The Help, which is about the domestic help. And I thought, oh my God, is there a story about the domestic help in Iran? Oh. So this, I play with the word basement, because not only did the staff live in the basement of the house, but they were the foundation of the many of the changes to come. So the word basement appealed to me. And in there, you will meet a lot of the characters that you have already met in Sky of Red Poppies.
And when will this book come out?
I hope by the end of the year, but you know how it is.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to it. Our time is up, Zoe, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad to tell you that the blurb that East County Magazine wrote, something that East County Magazine wrote in their review, Dennis Moore wrote that, now appears on the back cover of the French edition of my book.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank you again. And for more information on Zoe Garamani and her work, please visit her website at www.zoegaramani.com. And let me spell that. It's Zoegharemani. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.